This is the Rails Coach Podcast, Episode 7. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 7th episode of the Rails Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week we're going to talk about practicing coding, especially with programming exercises and code katas. Before I get started, I'd like to remind everybody that you can leave us a message at 801-753-8279 or by emailing podcast@railscoach.com. If you make the call or email in an audio clip that you can record on your iPhone or iPod, we'll play them back on the show and we'll try and answer your questions. Also in Rails Coach news, next week we're going to be talking to Pratik Naik, or Naik. I'm not sure how to say his name. He's on the Rails core team, and he has also been working on a new web framework called Cramp, and that should be really exciting. And I'm really looking forward to talking to him about what makes a great developer, especially knowing that they're somewhat picky about the people that they let on the Rails core team. So it should be a good interview, and I'm looking forward to it. To get started, I'm just going to list off a few of the programming exercises that are out there. I wrote an article on my blog that I'll also put a link to. And basically, I talked about the three that I'd worked on. And then I got a whole bunch of recommendations for other code practice or coding exercises. And so the first one that I'm going to talk about, or the first one that I'm going to just mention, is Project Euler. That's projecteuler.net, projecteuler.net. And basically what it is they have a bunch of math problems that you solve with programming. And I've put my solutions on GitHub. I'll put a link to that as well. Another one is the Ruby Quiz. And that's one that James Edward Gray put together. He ran it for about 3 years, and I talked to him on a past episode. So I'll put a link to that and a link to the interview with him. Another one that a lot of people have recommended is the Code Kata by Dave Thomas of the Pragmatic Programmers. And, it's just a list of exercises, usually focused on one or two areas of development. And it's really, really interesting, you know, some of the things that he comes up with. And the interesting thing I found with those is that in a lot of cases, I found that people have actually used the technologies that he talks about. One of the examples is bloom filters, and I'll get into where I've been exposed to that later. Then in the comments, Lars Westergren posted 15 exercises to knowing.net. But it really looks like it's 15 exercises to know a programming language. And there are three blog posts or three articles that are, it looks like they were all posted on the same date a couple of years ago. But it looks like they're interesting ways to get exposed to programming. Another one is Programming Praxis at programmingpraxis.com. Somebody else mentioned Python Challenge. It's at www.pythonchallenge.com. Just a whole bunch. I guess there's a JVM specific one that's at codingkata.org. And just everybody just take an opportunity, see what's out there. And I think this is also a good opportunity for people to learn a new language. And so, I mean, some of these look like they're geared toward .NET or Python or Java, or Ruby. I always forget that because that's pretty much my default language at the moment. But at the same time, I think we really have opportunities to learn and grow. Basically, first off, I'm going to talk about why I think we need to do programming practice. And then we'll talk about some of the benefits that have come from it. And then we'll talk about some of the things that I've learned from some of these. I'd also like to mention before we get going that you can always make up your own. I mean, if there's something that you want to build a program to do, and it doesn't actually have to do anything useful. I mean, you can build one that solves crosswords or solves Sudoku puzzles or plays Hangman, or, you know, I've seen a lot of challenges out there that, you know, they say, hey, you know, build this app and the fastest or most efficient or most ingenious one, you know, get some prize. So, I mean, that's something just to look at, you know, that there are all of these challenges out there, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with going for it, you know. I mean, even if you don't think you have a chance to win, you can at least do it for the experience. Anyway, I started attending the users group about 2 years ago, and one of the guys there, he was really into these. He actually told James Edward Gray, when he stopped doing the Ruby quiz, that he'd ruined his Ruby quiz. He was that upset. You know, and he's the one that introduced me to Project Euler. So we'll just go ahead and start with some of these, but there are a couple of things that I've learned from these, and one of them really doesn't have anything to do with any particular programming exercise. And that is that, you know, I got used to doing like test-driven development was one of the things that I really learned from some of these and from watching other people do them. And the reason I say that is because I was interested in the practice. And so what happened was I picked up some of these programming exercises and I just started writing the tests first just to see how it went. This was back when I was new to it and working for a client when I was working at SolutionStream. And they were insisting on test first. And so this was one way that I used to get used to doing test first development or test driven development, whatever you want to call it, was that, you know, I picked up some of these problems and just solved them with tests. Another thing is you start to learn, especially if they're time sensitive problems like Project Euler, they can't enforce it. If you get the right answer, you can get credit for it. But, you know, they tell you that they want you to be able to solve it in less than a minute. Or at least that was what my friend told me. I never actually read the directions after he told me how to do them. But anyway, so then you start looking and you start figuring out how to optimize your code. Because if it needs to run in less than a minute and you can't get your answer for 5, then you start looking at your code and going, okay, what can I rip out of this? You know, what is unnecessary? Or, you know, you start looking at it and going, oh, well, there's this built-in function. You start looking at your classes that you're using or libraries that you're using, and you say, oh, well, string has this built-in function that does this and this. And since Ruby's implemented in C, my implementation in Ruby would be slower than the implementation that the Ruby core guys put in C, you know, because it just calls down into the Ruby interpreter, and the interpreter runs it in compiled code. So, you know, you start learning the ins and outs of whatever language you're using and start finding ways to make it better. You know, I highly, highly recommend that if you're looking at a new library that you want to try out or looking at, you know, different development techniques, that you take the chance and go and look at some of these problems and see if you can find one that that applies. You know, that you can, you know, put that into practice with and just see what it does, just see how it works. Because usually if you don't understand the library, it's really hard to come up with this problem that you can apply it to, so much as if you go out and find problems that you can solve with it that other people have come up with. You know, then you can start understanding, oh, it works in this instance. It doesn't make sense in that instance. And, you know, you can possibly save yourself some trouble coding later on. You know, the Ruby quiz was interesting. Some of the quiz questions, you know, I didn't completely understand what they were asking for, but most of them are just really good. I've looked at them. I think I tried to solve a couple of them a while ago, but I never actually put them into a repository, so I'll have to do that. The code katas, when I went to a meeting, a users group meeting a while back, the guy that organizes it, he also organizes the Mountain West Ruby Conf out here in Salt Lake City. He demonstrated one of the code kata that was to build a bloom filter. Now, the interesting thing is that he works for Mozy, which is an online backup company that I used to work for. And they actually use Bloom filters in their system. What they do is they make sure that a file, if you upload a file to their system, they make sure that the file isn't already in the system. So, you know, if you back it up from a couple of different places, rather than store it three different times from three different machines, they'll store it once from the three different machines. And then as you make changes to it, then they'll store the patches to the file, which is something else. But, you know, what happens is it actually sends up a couple of hashes, different hashes of the file, and then they use the Bloom filter to determine if the file is actually in the system. And, you know, Bloom filters are really, really interesting. I watched another Code Kata. It's a video that was recorded at the Orlando Ruby Users Group by Greg Pollack. And basically there, it's Corey Haynes. And he is doing a string tokenizer in Ruby. And he does it all test-driven development. And, you know, it's just really interesting because there's so much more there than just how to build a string tokenizer. It's, you know, how do you write your tests? And, you know, once you have your tests written and you get them passing, you know, then what do? You know, and when do you write more tests, and how do you consolidate your tests? And I mean, there are so many things that you can learn from watching somebody else do a Code Kata. And so I recommend, if you have a chance, to find somebody that's maybe a little bit better than you and take the chance to sit down with them and just work through one of these problems for an hour or so. You know, it's just it's really just a fascinating thing. And the other thing that I've noticed, and this is something that applies maybe more to the other podcast I do, which is called the Intentional Excellence Podcast, and you can find that at intentionalexcellencepodcast.com, is that basically if I practice doing something right, if I practice, I don't know, I've been doing a lot of running lately, for example, or swimming. I used to swim in high school. And, you know, if you practice your form correctly, then you move through the water more quickly. And it's the same thing in programming. If you practice using a programming exercise the way that it's intended, and you know, you kind of get your feet wet and get used to the way that it works and the way that it affects the way that you code, then you start to get better at it, you get more comfortable at it, you get faster at it. And that kind of practice is something that's really important if you want to enhance your skills as a programmer. One other thing that I talked about before is using these kinds of exercises to learn another language. I don't know if any of you remember when you were first learning how to program. My programming experience started in like the eighth grade when I got a TI-85 calculator and I was programming against that. But, you know, any formal education or exposure to real programming methodologies occurred in college. I went to Brigham Young University and I got a degree from there, but that's neither here nor there. Basically, the first class that I took in programming was in Java. And, you know, I thought Java was pretty cool at the time. And, you know, there are some things that I still like about it. But, you know, I just don't program in it full time. The thing that I learned there from those exercises was, you know, how to program. You know, more than really how the Java programming language worked or how to deal with the compiler, which sometimes is sort of a pain. But, you know, you gain these practices, you learn these ways of doing things, and you know, you find that you can really just enhance the way that you code by doing this. And you know, I kind of got my feet wet with Ruby doing other things. You know, I was actually writing a production system. I got thrown right in. But you know, when I learned C and C++ and Java, you know, it was all in these classes, and they were all kind of contrived throwaway code, so to speak. But at the same time, I mean, you know, that really shaped the way that I look at things and the way that I program against problems. And the more exposure that you get, and I see this all the time at work, because, you know, there are people that just, you know, are somewhat new to programming. And, you know, you just see the difference between the different levels of people who get involved and really enjoy doing this kind of thing versus the people that don't. And so, you know, if you really want to understand where people are at, then, you know, these coding exercises really give you a hint. When I worked for Mozy, their process for hiring a developer was actually pretty rough. I don't think they do it anymore, but what they did was they would bring them in for an interview, and they would put them up on the whiteboard in front of a couple of their developers. And those developers would just ask them questions and make them write sample code on the board, which is kind of hard because you usually don't think about coding in that way. You're usually thinking about coding in the sense of, hey, you know, I'm gonna put it in the machine, see if it runs, or put it in the machine and see if it compiles, you know. And so you don't have that to lean on. All you have is, gee, I'm gonna write this on the board and hope I don't screw it up. I don't put a typo in it. So, you know, anyway, and then what they usually did is after that, then they'd sit them down at a computer and they'd give them a problem to code up. One thing that they did later on was they actually had, what did they call it? It was a big programming contest. And anyway, they were looking for some new developers because they needed more help with the applications that they were building. So they actually held this big contest. They only held it once. Or no, they held it twice, but the second time I don't remember why they quit after the second time, but I don't think they found as much talent the second time around as they wanted. But basically, they gave them a bunch of exercises, and you know, the first, you know, seven or eight exercises were actually just to weed people out, and you know, they did them online. You know, they just post them and say, you have 30 minutes to complete this. People would finish them and then send them in. And then the final round, they narrowed it down to 10 people. And those 10 people, they actually had come into the office and, you know, work on the last problem. And it was really interesting, you know, the 10 people, it turned out that none of them really could solve the last problem in the time frame that they'd given. I don't know that the developers who came up with the problems could solve them in that time frame either. So they wound up splitting the prize, but they also hired a couple of people off of that. And I remember when I was first in support at Mozy, they had a new developer or a new developing candidate come in. And, you know, they did the interview, and then they sat him down at a machine, and they said, hey, we want you to build a basic blog for us in Ruby on Rails. And so he wound up sitting in our office at a workstation we weren't using and coding that up. And it was really interesting because he didn't finish it before he had to leave. And I don't know if they were going to hire him or not, but what wound up happening is he decided he wanted the job bad enough that he actually sat down and finished it at home. And I don't think he took the code with him, so I think he had to start over from scratch. But, you know, it was that kind of thing where it's like, hey, you know, I really want to see if I can do this. Or, you know, hey, you know, I want to prove to them that I can do this. And in either one, you know, I think is a valid reason for doing these kinds of things. But, you know, ultimately, it demonstrates what you're capable of. And so I highly recommend if you're doing these that you save your result, your examples, and put them somewhere where people can see them. And, you know, it serves as an example of what you can do, and it also, you know, both for you and for potential employers or clients. You know, it either way, you know, I really believe in practice, and I really believe in repetition. And you know, I believe that, you know, if you keep doing the right things, that you will eventually naturally do the right things. And so I just can't recommend highly enough to you that you get involved, you find opportunities to do this kind of practice whenever you can. And I think both you and anyone you're working for will benefit from it. Well, that's about all I have this week. I was feeling a little under the weather today, so I'm probably just going to cut this a little short. But I do want to remind you that you can call and leave a message at, it's at 801-753-8279, or email at podcast@railscoach.com. I'd also like to recommend, I'm doing this for free, so if you do like what you're hearing, I would recommend that you you go to the website, railscoach.com, click on the donate button. I mean, $5 or $10, I'd really appreciate it. There's also a subscribe link for iTunes, and I'm working on getting the show into other podcatching areas like Podcast Alley or the Zune and things like that. So if there's somewhere that you'd like to see this, email me at podcast@railscoach.com and I'll see if I can get it up in whatever area that you're looking to consume it in. Other than that, I'd just like to thank you for listening and ask you to leave feedback for us in iTunes. And that's all. I'll see you next week with the interview with Pratik. Thanks. Bye.